Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Looking for the perfect First Communion, Confirmation, or RCIA gift? Consider a beautiful, heirloom-quality, made-in-Italy rosary from Ghirelli. A Ghirelli rosary will be prayed with and cherished forever, guaranteed. Shop Ghirelli today. That's GHIRELLI.com.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this special audio cast, we're going to talk to someone who went through a transgender surgery. Pretty interesting and challenging. So sit back and...
1, 2, 3!
Listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion as I interview my special guest, Ashley Jane Morgan. I think you would remember Ashley from several episodes back. I interviewed a transgender woman before the surgery, and now several months after the surgery, I speak with Ashley again and try to figure out how things have gone. This is one of those incredibly difficult topics, and so while I handle things, I think, as respectfully as I can, and Ashley was a fantastic guest, I will recommend that if you are someone under the age of 18, that you don't just listen to this without talking to your parents and getting permission to hear this conversation, just because we're going to talk on some adult things, looking at the human body as God intended it, as an instrument truly of peace, love, and justice. But at the same time, knowing that our human body is subject to nature and therefore it can be flawed. And so this conversation goes very deep into what it was like after the surgery. And then after this deep dish discussion, I'm going to share with you my carryout order and how I can try to at least approach people of the quote-unquote transgender community, most importantly, not as transgenders, but as children of God. And so I hope you enjoy this special episode, which is brought to you by SoulCore.com. SoulCore.com is a movement that pairs core strengthening, stretching, and functional movement with the prayers of the rosary. It's a sensory experience combining candlelight, music, scripture, and movement to nourish body, mind, and soul, and to encourage deeper reflection on the virtues of the rosary. Basically, SoulCore, though it's not affiliated with other exercise or disciplines like yoga or Sanskrit, it is basically an opportunity for people to receive those benefits of true SoulCore training. So learn more at SoulCore.com and enjoy this deliciously deep discussion on Shoot the Shiitake. We'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion with Ashley Jane Morgan. Thank you for coming back onto my show with me.
Oh, you're welcome, Father Leo. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And as I promised the first time, it would be around a meal, and I cooked you a meal. And be honest, how was it?
It was absolutely amazing. You are a wonderful, wonderful cook.
Well, thank you very much. And I want to thank you for your courage to come back and to share with us your experience of what it was like after the surgery. But I want to kind of go through it in order first. Right before surgery, did you have any second thoughts? Were you scared? Were you nervous? What was going on in your brain?
Actually, no. I was very confident about what was going on. I'd known I'd made the right decision. And I didn't get nervous all the way up until the time they took me into the operating room. I was completely at peace. I was just very calm and ready to move through the process.
Okay. And like last minute, you mentioned off of record, you told the anesthesiologist something.
Right. After my parents left the area where they prep you for surgery, and one of my good friends, Susan, was with me, and she left, they went to the waiting room. The anesthesiologist came in and asked me if I was ready. And she looked at me and she said, "Are you nervous or scared or anything?" And I said, "No, I'm actually quite fine. I'm ready to move through this." And I said, "But I do want to ask you one thing." And I looked at her and I said, "Please bring me back because my kids need me. That is my only fear, is that I don't come back for my kids." And we both got a little weepy and she wheeled me back to the operating room and off we went.
Okay. And then your first memory when you kind of came back from it all?
My first memory, I opened my eyes. I was really struggling to open my eyes. And I saw my mom standing over me and she was holding my hand. And I don't remember what she said. I don't remember what I said, but I just remember smiling, seeing her. There was another memory that happened during all of this. And I didn't recollect it till a couple of days later.
Okay.
And I'd finally gotten up out of bed and they want you to walk around and get mobile. And so I did the biggest thing in 3 days. I took a walk 10 steps and sat in a chair, which probably doesn't sound like much to most people, but it was an effort.
Was it painful down there?
It was uncomfortable. I managed through this on Tylenol.
So I'm just going to have to ask, did you look underneath the covers and say, "It's gone"?
Well, there was nothing to look at because I was bandaged up, basically wearing a pair of bandage pants.
Got it.
As it were, and I couldn't see anything. I could feel discomfort. That was really, really about it. They keep you wrapped up like that for several days until they are ready to start getting you ready to go home.
Okay. And then your mom and dad, they were supportive of you at that point?
Absolutely.
And then afterwards?
Absolutely. They've been nothing but wonderful, nothing but supportive. My surgery was 13 and a half hours.
13 and a half hours.
Yes.
And it is life-threatening. It could go wrong.
Absolutely. Things could go wrong. Now, no one has ever died from this.
Okay.
But there can be issues. And of course, knowing my luck, the way things are, I would have been the first.
So 13 hours later, you wake up. And how long was recovery altogether?
Recovery was really about 8 weeks.
8 weeks. And were you bedridden? And were you?
For about the first week, I was really in bed and it really was uncomfortable to move around.
Did you at one point think, "Man, why would I do this to myself"?
I thought more along the lines of, this must have been just tremendously important to me to put myself through this.
Got it. Okay. And obviously it was. And right. So 8 weeks later, you obviously were just trying to live as best as you possibly can. And once those bandages were taken off, I am going to have to ask, what were your initial thoughts when you looked down there?
They took the bandages off in the hospital. It was on day 4. And I was tremendously excited to see what was there. And then they took the bandages off and I just was absolutely amazed at what I saw. They come in with hand mirrors and the whole nine yards so you can kind of see everything that's going on. Unfortunately, just after surgery and just after the point where they take the bandages off, to say it politely, everything looks rather angry. certainly isn't the picture of beauty that you would actually hope for, but it's reality. It's surgery. Now, when we got to the end of 8 weeks, when everything was healed, the swelling was gone, things had returned to quote unquote normal. It's amazing it's absolutely amazing the skill of the surgeon and what the surgeon was able to create. And not to diminish what he did, but, you know, he took what was there and reformed it, resculpted it, so to speak, into what I have now. So I was made for this. And there were comments by the surgeon afterwards, and he was very proud of himself, I will say that. And he told my mom when he came out of the operating room, he said, "Ashley is going to just be so happy with this because I did one heck of a good job."
Okay. And this one heck of a good job, that now means, and sorry to be so blunt with these questions, but you know, that's just the whole point of it all.
Right.
You now no longer have to look down at what pair of shoes you're wearing.
Right.
And now you sit.
Yes. I haven't stood up
to
do a number one in a long time.
Even before the surgery?
Even before the surgery.
Okay.
Even though I guess I could, it just seemed not right, I guess. I don't know.
And the other question is, do you miss the male part?
No, not at all. Not at all. When I move through life, I'm very conscious of my body. And I never thought in my wildest dreams I would have felt as complete as I do right now. I appreciate my body now. I can walk in front of a mirror and everything is correct. And when I say walk in front of a mirror, I mean without any clothes on.
Okay.
It's just how I always felt I should be.
So from head to toe, you are now Ashley Jane Morgan. Hair, your own? Extensions, wig?
No, my hair is actually not my own.
Okay.
My natural hair is actually about as long as my hair, but it's still a little thin on the top, which I'm working on through a couple different approaches of medicine and Brogaine for women and
okay.
things of that. And it's growing. My goal is not very aggressive because I have to have patience with some of this. My goal is within 5 years to be able to just wear my own hair.
Okay. And then the exercise and things of that nature. I mean, you could still probably bench press a...
No. See, the thing is you lose about 30% of your muscle mass when you take estrogen.
Okay.
Because it undoes your male muscle mass. So I am now, you know, I've lost all of that.
And so you still have to have an injection each week?
Yes. It's a much smaller injection, but I still have to do it. Eventually, I'll probably go to a different delivery method, meaning pills.
Okay.
But for now, we're going to just continue to do the injection because that's what they want me to do.
And again, sorry for the bluntness, but sensation in those parts, they are able to kind of recreate a sensational
yes.
experience.
It works almost exactly as a genetic female's. And the sensation is slightly diminished because of the surgery and because there aren't quite as many nerve endings down there naturally. But it's amazing. I can't really articulate politely.
You can articulate any way you want. We're just shooting the shiitake here.
But it works like a charm. It works as designed.
Okay.
And it's much more amazing than anything I ever experienced the other way.
So that's the whole biology of it all. And so thanks for going through that with me. And I know that that's painful. It's painful actually for me to even talk about.
Sure.
But please know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not asking out of disrespect towards anyone's sensibilities because we believe that God made the body. In Ashley's case, you believe that you were given the wrong body or at least a different body. How do you respond to people when they say, but God doesn't make mistakes?
God doesn't make mistakes, but nature certainly has its issues. It's not necessarily perfect. And I actually perceive it as this, you know, the old saying is God only gives you what you can handle.
Mm-hmm.
I wish God didn't trust me quite so much sometimes, but I think this was put in my path purposely. I think I was sent through this for a multitude of reasons.
Now, this may be a very inappropriate question, but the cost, how much does something like, I mean, does insurance cover this?
Yes, my insurance did cover this.
The whole thing?
100%. I didn't pay for one Tylenol.
You're kidding.
Not at all. Okay. I had phenomenal insurance.
Clearly.
Yes. I figured it was going to cost something, but all of the bills came and all of them had zeros on them.
Wow.
And it was, it actually cost more money than the average new car.
The average new car.
Yeah. It was $52,400 was the grand total of my surgery.
So, you know, that's not inexpensive.
No, it's not. But I also did go to the finest medical facility in the world, or one of them.
Sure.
At John Hopkins.
Uh-huh.
And it's not cheap to stay there for 5 days.
Sure. Let's go through kind of the relationships now.
Okay.
Your former self, we don't need to know what your name was.
Right.
But did people mourn that? Did they say goodbye to the brother that you were, the son that you were, the husband that you were?
Yeah, I think people said that goodbye a long time ago.
Okay, so that was all done way in advance.
Way in advance. I mean, this was known since about 2012. 2011, it was very unknown, but only to me and my ex. 2015 is when I transitioned, as they say, and started living full-time as a woman. And it was, I think, at that point,
sure,
when the mourning process started, because you can talk about something all that you want, but until it's a reality day in and day out, it doesn't really exist.
And so now there are no slip-ups in your family calling you previously who you
were? Oh, it depends on the day. My mom and dad are really good about it, and they're really good about her and she. Some of my older friends, they still slip occasionally, and it doesn't really necessarily bother me.
So you're not going to get up in their face and have a march or anything?
In some ways, I'm asking a lot of the world to accept this because it's not what people are used to. So in some ways, I'm a little more tolerant and try to meet people halfway.
Yeah.
You know,
I remember commenting that you were not militant, which makes this a much more pleasant conversation.
No. And, you know, the only person on the planet that really ever purposely calls me by my previous name is my ex. And I've asked nicely for her to not do that.
Sure.
And there's still, I think, a lot of anger there, which I understand. And so I just kind of shrug it off and keep moving through life.
Sure. When you meet with your ex, what's that like? Is there not even a handshake? Is there a hug at least?
Oh,
or
no.
Anything?
There's the two of us haven't actually touched each other, even as a handshake or putting an arm on a shoulder or anything.
When you married her, you were attracted to her.
Sure.
Is that still the case now? Or
no. I told you, or I'd alluded before, that my attraction had changed. And since I've kind of settled into who I am, I've started my attraction to people in general is based on what's inside and how they treat others. So that's a big part of
sure.
it.
Sure. And then with your children, at present, the ages of your daughters are
19, 17, 14, 8, and 7.
Tell me about that, because they obviously have gone through a lot. There's a lot for them to kind of consider.
Sure. I think the important part of the conversation there is kids are resilient.
You're asking a lot of them at a young age.
But absolutely asking a lot of them. It took some time, but for the most part, it's almost like we've never really skipped a beat. My 19-year-old is in college and involved with a job and all kinds of busy things, so I don't see her as much as I would prefer. My 17-year-old actually moved in with me full time, and she's going to finish her senior year at high school living with me.
Okay.
And then the youngest three I have basically every other week.
Okay. And the one that's living with you now, and in fact, all your children, they still call you.
They call me dad. They do. I can't, I don't want to take that away from them.
Okay.
It is who I am, and I'm not going to deny who I am. It just happens to not be what everybody's used to. When we're out in public, we kind of have some other names that they call me. They'll call me Ashley, or the two little ones typically will call me Madre, which is
fine. Because you're so Spanish?
Yeah, because I'm so Spanish, right, exactly. Well, I didn't want them to call me mom necessarily because I'm not mom, and I wouldn't want to take that away from their mom. You know, that's not what all of this is about, and it's just learning to be able to coexist in all of this.
This coexistence with your children,
with your wife, parents, your siblings, they've all kind of come around to it as well?
Yeah, everybody's just kind of, we're at the business as usual point of life, I think. It's mm-hmm. not so much a big deal. There are still some people in the family that are just kind of not too sure about it or don't necessarily agree with it. And that's fine. And everybody has a right to feel the way they feel.
Do you miss that thrill of the change now that you are in, on the outside, a woman's, in a woman's body? Like, do you miss that thrill of dressing up?
No, because it changes. When you finally start doing it every day, like anything else, it's not exciting anymore, but it just feels right. It's kind of like a person that has anxiety, and it's the cure.
So let me just make sure that I've got the verbiage correct as best as I possibly can. Right now, you just call yourself a woman,
mm-hmm.
but would you call yourself a transgender woman?
No, I don't identify that way anymore, really.
Okay.
I mean, I am transgender in the definition because I'm living across from my biological gender, but I'm just happy to be Ashley. I'm happy to be a woman. That's who I am. And I don't need the descriptor at the beginning
sure.
of it. And, you know, I'm just...
Do you feel obligated to tell people that?
Not really. If somebody asks, because, you know, if you're around me long enough, you might figure it out.
Sure.
I'm polite about it. And as long as they're polite about it, I'll answer any questions that they have.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe yourself? Are you like a girly, girly, girly girl? Are you kind of more of an independent kind of woman? And what part of your former male self is still kind of with you? I mean,
Well, I'm definitely a girly girl. I like to be pretty. I like my nails done. I like to look nice. You know, very, very rarely do I roll into Walmart with my hair in 27 different directions, you know, and I certainly would never wear my pajamas out of the house. So I'm definitely a girly girl. I don't really know if there's anything specific left from that past life, because I brought so much of that with me.
How about like being able to fix cars, being able to change a tire? I mean, your physical agilities and such like that.
Right. Well, last summer, I changed the brakes on my car myself in my friend's driveway. And later that fall, I changed all the spark plugs in the car. So I can still do that. I just wear rubber gloves so I don't get my hands dirty.
Sure. And you say you think like a woman now.
Yes.
How different is that from how you thought? I mean, let me just throw out those stereotypes.
Sure.
Are you way more emotional now? Do you find yourself more talkative? I mean, all of
yes,
those
absolutely.
Venus and Mars stereotypes.
Yeah, absolutely. If they could figure out a way to harness the energy of me talking, we could probably solve the world's energy problems because I can talk.
But were you like that prior?
No, not really. I get preachy at times, I guess, or just, you know, if I had a point I wanted to get across.
How about emotional?
Emotional, yes. The emotions aren't, I guess it's hard to describe. They're more intense. It's not like there are more of them. They're just more intense. Okay. So sad is like the tears just automatically fly out.
Okay.
It's amazing.
And we're going to get to one more emotion when we return. And that's going to be about your personal relationships now. Where are you in all of this? What is kind of your hopes and dreams? And more Shoot the Shiitake with Ashley Jane Morgan. So many months after the surgery, when we return, more deep dish discussion. And we're going to try to figure out, most importantly, how we as a Catholic community and Ashley as a transgender woman, as she calls herself a woman, how does she fit into it all? When we return for more Shoot the Shiitake. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake for the second half of my deep dish discussion with Ashley Jane Morgan several months after her surgery. Thankfully successful. She came out of it. She's healthy and she just had lunch and I cooked it for her. Some unique flavors. You've never had some of those flavors before that I? Familiar-ish?
Yeah, they're familiar. Definitely familiar.
How about that fried banana dessert?
That was wonderful.
Different?
That absolutely was.
Okay.
It was not sugary sweet, but it was natural sweet.
I'll take that.
Great, great texture. Absolutely wonderful.
Is cooking something that you enjoy doing now, as Ashley, as opposed to when you were not?
I actually always enjoyed cooking.
Okay.
Like I had said before, I brought a lot of me with me because that's who I am.
Certainly.
Most of me didn't change just the way that I look.
Okay. And how about organization? I mean, were you a slob before as a guy and now neater as a woman?
No, I've always been organized and neat. OCD in the closet with shirts all hanging the same direction on the hanger, dresses all hanging in the same direction in the hanger, and they're all organized according to color.
And now shopping for yourself. Are you finding that difficult, or are you going to places that, you know, fit your build?
Well, believe it or not, women have so many different shapes and sizes.
Yes, they do.
There's something for everyone. So, you know, years ago, I had trouble finding clothes that fit my build, so to speak. But now that I've lost my upper body muscle mass and I'm hippier, my top size and my bottom size are even.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of where you find yourself proportional to...
Yes.
More women's clothing.
Yes, absolutely. Dresses fit nicer now because I have hips and a waist. Skirts, same kind of thing.
And let's just get into, Ashley, what makes you tick now? And let's talk about your personal life.
Okay.
What makes you tick?
What makes me tick? I don't know. I guess I have a passion for life. I enjoy every experience of every day, good or bad. I think I just kind of... sometimes I'm a spectator. Other times, like with my kids, I'm a tour guide. Mm-hmm. It just really depends on where I am and what hat I need to wear. I have a great job that I absolutely love. It's crazy busy. And, you know, the days are long, but it's very rewarding personally.
On your downtime?
My downtime. My downtime has become, you know, typically one or two nights here or there. After work because of, you know, taking care of the kids and my 17-year-old living with me. But, you know, on a Friday night, come home from work, grab my favorite carryout meal, put my PJs on and sit there and watch movies on TV all night until I fall asleep.
Okay. And let's talk about your personal life now. Okay. Do you have one?
I do.
You're dating somebody?
Not dating anybody right now. I did date someone for 3 months and that ended a couple of weeks ago. And it was certainly a very nice time. I made a friend. And I guess I was in a place that I'd never been in a relationship. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out. But, you know, not...
Did you have to explain yourself to that person?
I did. And typically what happens in the dating world is people say that they have an open mind. And then when it comes right down to it, they learn that they either really do or they really don't. And he was very nice and very caring and very friendly personality. But I think ultimately in the end, there was that one thing that was sticking in the back of his head. And he was also very close with some family members that he was concerned, I think, about how this was going to go over. So in an effort to not want to see anyone struggle, I ended it so that he really would not have to pain over how to move through life with me and have to explain me to his family.
And you're seeking what ultimately?
I want a companion in life. I want somebody to share life with and to go do things and have a relationship.
Does that mean a spouse?
I don't know that I would ever get married again. That's a tough one. I think I would have to really find the right person, really find someone that no matter what, accepted me on my worst day just as much as they accept me on my best.
And when you're with your female friends,
They
fully accept you? And do you just get as chatty catty and...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have some tremendously wonderful friends.
Going out to a bar, is that your scene or?
I will go out and meet the girls at a bar for kind of a...
Are you a flirt?
I am a flirt. I absolutely am a flirt.
That's a good confession right there. And I remember you saying that your kind of your inclination would be an alpha male.
Yes.
Which is what you were.
Right, right. I'm still a sucker for the bad boy.
Okay. And what's been people's reaction when you say flirt with a guy?
Most people don't know. Okay. So unless people know that that's Ashley sitting over there in that bar stool, they don't really pick up on it too much. Mm-hmm. If you're around me long enough, like I said, yeah, you're going to figure it out.
And in what way? Tell me about that.
Well, there are cues. Okay. My voice isn't perfect. You know, I'm still a big girl mm-hmm. as far as women go. Even though I'm 5'9", I still kind of have some broad shoulders. Mm-hmm. And when you start combining those little cues that are left over, they can really equate into somebody being able to figure it out.
And but you don't tell them?
No, I don't necessarily tell them right out of the starting gate. You know, if we get to the point where somebody's asking for a phone number or something, then we're going to have a conversation because I don't want anybody to have that kind of a surprise.
Okay.
You know, but all I'm really looking for is someone to be happy with. And if I don't find someone, that's fine too, because I'm okay alone as well.
Let's talk politics because
oh no.
In a lot of ways, unfortunately, all of the things that are supposed to be personal, such as sexual issues, have made their way out either on the street with the march or now laws. What are your thoughts on laws currently? I mean, is America in a bad place when it comes to this issue? Or where do we need to be? Just hear your thoughts.
Well, interestingly enough, I'm probably one of the most conservative trans people that you'll ever meet. I wish we lived in a world where we didn't need a law to tell you how to treat another human being. And that's one of the things that I'm very vocal about, is that I do want less government in our lives. But unfortunately, we live in such a day and age where those protections have to exist. You know, we've got kind of a huge hump to get over in all of this. And I think people also need to be a little bit more understanding about their fellow humans and that we are all different.
We are all different. And therefore, that word normal kind of comes into play.
Sure.
And that it's challenging because there are, in a sense, a lot of people who fit a stereotype of quote unquote normalcy. And when they see deviation from their norm, that's when they kind of get up in arms.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that because one of the comments that my now 17-year-old said about 10 years ago before any of this existed is, you know, there was something going on in the family and you know, everybody was upset about something. And she looked at my ex and I and said, I wish we could just have a normal family like the so-and-sos down the street. And I looked at her and I said, do you really think the so-and-sos down the street are normal? And how do you define that? I said, you have no idea what happens when somebody's doors are closed and what goes on in their house and in their lives. So what you perceive as normal probably is no different than how things are here. Okay. And so we, as society, we lump everything into something that we can digest and say, okay, well, they're the group of normal people because on the surface, they all look the same, act the same, do the same things. And then you see this other group of people, be it trans people, gay people, different races, whatever else, and we lump them into a group and they're different. So then that becomes not normal.
Okay. And there's certainly another part of society that you find yourself involved in because it's a part of you. It's the Catholic faith.
Sure.
Tell me about that.
Well, that's... it's very near and dear to my heart. It was how I was raised. I hold it very close to me. And I struggle with it because in so many ways, I feel like if I were ever caught in a Catholic church, I'd be thrown in Catholic jail.
Catholic jail. I mean, I hate to say it. Wouldn't you like that? Where all the bad boys are.
Well...
No, I'm kidding with you. But what do you mean by Catholic jail and thrown out? I'd love to hear that.
We kind of alluded to this earlier, but, you know.
Yeah, this is during lunch. You mentioned it.
During lunch. You know, I do go to church, and I do go to Catholic church. And my biggest fear is walking up to receive communion and the priest figuring out that I was transgender and saying, nope, sorry, next.
No, our biggest concerns are who are gluten-free.
Right.
You know, those people, to be honest with you. And so I'm just going to tell you that there is no official statement that a transgender person can't receive communion.
Okay.
It requires that transgender person to be living a life of purity and goodness and staying away from mortal sins.
Sure.
As such.
Right.
Which is probably the biggest issue of all. And so I'm glad that you mentioned it, because do you feel that the Catholic Church doesn't respect you, doesn't care?
I don't think they don't respect me, and it's not that they don't care, they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And
why do you think that's the case?
And don't take this the wrong way.
But no, please.
I think the Catholic Church has kind of come up through societal evolution a little bit slow. That, you know, times change. It's not 10 years ago. It's not 20 years ago. It's not 100 years ago. It's right now. And we've seen some good change with the new Pope. Some things have been a little more relaxed, I think, or a little more accepted.
Like what?
To a degree. I can't even put anything specific on it, but I think I feel that way.
You feel that way?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's a real cause for conversation. So you feel a little bit better with the church because of the current Pope Francis?
Yes. Yes.
As opposed to prior?
Prior, yes.
And you feel that you still feel connected to the Catholic Church and
sure.
Identify...
Absolutely.
As a Catholic.
Absolutely.
How does that come across to you, other transgender friends or anyone else in the LGBT community?
It creates a little bit of static, because a lot of people in the LGBT community are very, you know, anti-Catholic, or not necessarily anti-Catholic, but just, you know, unless you're going to go to a place where they have the sign on the door that says everyone welcome and they actually really mean it, they don't want anything to do with it. I just happen to have my faith, and I'm proud of my faith.
And when you say you're proud of your faith, because it just seems strange that, you know, that you're living a life that's different from what God put you in that situation as a male, so to speak.
True, but it's all about perspective.
Please tell me.
And I believe God put me into this path. I don't think that this was my choice. I know it wasn't my choice. No one would put themselves through what I've gone through to get to this point by choice. People throw that word, you chose this, around like, you know, it's a paper bag blowing in the wind. I choose to have cereal or pancakes for breakfast. I didn't choose to be transgender.
Not choose to be transgender. That's an interesting kind of way of reflecting on it.
Well, it's like,
which would you have chosen?
Well, it's like saying someone chose to become a drug addict.
I see.
You know, addiction is a disease, and it doesn't matter if it's drugs or alcohol or who knows what. They didn't choose that. Now, of course, everyone out there is going to say, but they can choose to take a drink or not take a drink. But when you have that disease, you really don't have a choice.
So kind of a diminishing of a person's freedom?
Sure.
What are... any regrets, any kind of concerns for you? I mean, knowing the suicide rate again, hopefully that's not entered your mind.
No, not at all. It's actually the furthest thing from my mind. I'm
okay.
Firmly inserted in my life, and I have all of the same things going on that anyone else has. You know, I'm taking care of kids. I have a job. I date. I go out with friends. I'm planning to go on a vacation at some point in time here. I have everything going just that a normal, hate to use that word, life would have in it. And there's no regrets, no sadness, no loss, no darkness. I'm a little bit different in that when I make up my mind to do something, I tend to just go do it and not look back. It's really easy to kind of do the hindsight as 2020, looking back at choices or decisions or things that you did in your life. And that's not really an accurate way, I think, to look at things. We all do the best that we can do at the time when we make decisions, and all we can do is move forward.
You heard your first interviews. I broke it up into two segments.
Yes.
I'd like to hear what you thought about your interviews.
I enjoyed them. It was nice to kind of be able to sit back and relax and listen to them a couple times and really kind of wrap my arms around how I felt about it. And ultimately, I felt pretty good. I felt like I shared some good insights with people that may not have had those before. Interestingly enough, some of the comments on Facebook were a little not so great, but the reaction was not nearly as over the top as I thought it could have been.
And sense of peace. Where is that coming from now? Where do you get it?
I just get it from living my life. I get it from being a parent and taking care of my kids. One of the things that I said earlier was sometimes we're a tour guide. Well, I feel like as a parent, especially with a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old who are now getting older, they don't need to, you know, shake their finger at their kids and tell them to do this and do that. I feel like I'm more of a tour guide. It's like, look, kids over here. Look, kids over there. Oh, when you do this, this is what happens. And I'm really getting some just wonderful, wonderful feedback from them.
And I asked this the last time. What do you think I need to be doing to be a good priest for you? To be a good representative of the Catholic Church?
I think cook for me regularly would be a good one.
And I also do laundry.
There you go. I do a lot of laundry myself. I enjoy it. I'm strange. I think really to continue what you're doing with listening to people, it's all about listening. Sometimes we can have a great conversation and not say anything at all. Understand where people are coming from and you know, have the feedback in that way. And, you know, you are very accepting, open-minded, even though some of this kind of rubs against what the church has taught you.
Can you tell if something rubs up against me incorrectly or like challenges me?
Yes.
Because I'm trying to keep a straight face,
yes,
and trying to be very diplomatic.
Yes, there are times, and I noticed this in the last interview, there are things that come out of my mouth that I know it just makes the hair...
my eyebrows raise.
Right. You've got this like one hair that stands up, you know.
Dang, get that hair. I gotta... Yeah, no, it's very true. I mean, and when I come back with my carryout order, I'll kind of reflect on exactly that, how challenging it sometimes is. But just the idea of me having lunch with you, me cooking for you, what's that kind of experience been? I mean, does that... Not just because I'm a chef on TV, but I'm a priest more than anything else. What is this doing for you? And why did you even come back for a second interview?
Well, I enjoy doing this. I enjoy sharing the information. And this is one of the ways to do that. I see you more as a human being than I see you as anything else. I see you as a person sitting across from me cooking that happens to be a priest that actually is interested in the story and how your organization, as it were, your company, can become more involved in understanding all of this.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my deep dish discussion with Ashley Jane Morgan several months after the surgery, after lunch, and just sharing the insights. And to be perfectly honest with you, it just seemed like I was interviewing a person. And when we return, you're going to hear my carryout order and my very honest experience of Ashley Jane Morgan before and after the surgery when we come back for my carryout order here on Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. We'll be back in just a moment. We hope you're enjoying this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake, and if you want to be a part of our organization and become a patron, all you've got to do is go to patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds. It's where we're creating community, deep dish discussions, and bite-sized theology. With multiple layers of becoming a sponsor, you can either participate as an appetizer or main course, be part of the smorgasbord, a plating grace partner, or even become part of our personal chef opportunity to learn more about how you can support us and create conversations that lead to conversion. Go to patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for my carryout order after talking to Ashley Jane Morgan. And I will be very honest with you. It was a great conversation, in my opinion. Could I have gone deeper and approached this a little bit more, how shall I say, antagonistically, the way some people I've experienced want to approach this community? I didn't want to go that route. I wanted to try to be more like Christ and just simply have a conversation around a meal and just learn. You remember, if you are part of the Shoot the Shiitake movement, you would remember that I interviewed Ashley right before her surgery, and I wanted to give her a few months, obviously, to kind of recuperate and heal. And I'm just glad that the surgery was successful in that she came out of it okay. Now, a lot of you are going to get upset with me because I'm referring to Ashley as a she. Now, please know that it's not because I'm quote-unquote accepting the sin of bodily, you know, mutation or mutilation or giving into the gender dysphoria. That's not it at all. I'm just trying to treat Ashley with the respect that she is asking for. And therefore, if she wants to call herself a she, then I'm not going to try to create a fight or an atmosphere of antagonism by constantly calling Ashley by her former pre-surgical self, he. That just would not be, I don't know, polite. I think I've used this reference before. If I call myself Father Leo, but someone refers to me as the Whore of Babylon minister Leo, you know, people who don't like the Catholic Church, I would find that person a little annoying. And so I guess perhaps out of respect or maybe out of my own insecurity, I just don't want to be annoying to Ashley. I don't want to be annoying to anyone in the gay community, in the transgender community, in the bisexual or lesbian or queer community. I don't want to be a source of frustration to them. But, you know, can I be at least a source of conversation that leads to some deeper form of conversion? Absolutely. Which is why I invited Ashley to lunch. She knew that, I mean, she knows that I'm a cook. I mean, pretty much everyone here listens knows that I like food and I like to cook. And that's the whole point, is to create the dinner table or the table or a place where you eat as the place where conversions can occur. So anyway, several things. As I listened to this like four times and tried to summarize some things, knowing that I can't solve everyone's issues regarding the transgender community at all. But I know that I was at a recent event at a very faith-filled Catholic church, and I had a big event and a lot of people came for the dinner that I was going to cook for, at least do the presentation for. Actually, no, I cooked everything with the assistance of a great nearby restaurant. And the reason why I'm not saying the name is because I don't want to call attention to anyone who might think they know who this family is that I'm talking about, okay? Well, it was clear that a set of parents, mom and dad, incredibly faithful people, because I saw them at both of my mission talks prior to the cooking event. And I remember seeing one of their sons there, and he's just a normal kid, you know, just a normal kid. And he came to both nights of the talk too. And, you know, for the most part, I think everybody enjoys my presentations. I'm very grateful that I've been able to reach out and, you know, touch the hearts of and bring about a movement for people of different ages and backgrounds. But then on the third night, when I did my cooking demonstration, this family brought another son who was obviously, who identified as a girl, just because you could tell it was a guy. You could just tell it was a guy. Although he tried to comport himself very much like a lady, you could just tell. I mean, you could see scruff, you know, very shaven tightly, but this might've been what I would consider a really good looking Italian young man, you know, deep olive skin, and you can tell when they bring out a beard, they have the stubble. You know, even if you shave it down, you can still see, in a way, the traces of the shadow, you know, and very prominent, you know, masculine features. Again, this guy would have looked like just a handsome Roman guy, but dressed like a girl. And, you know, with makeup and even kind of like a long wig, black hair. And basically I looked I looked at this person and I was basically going around to the different tables and just saying hi to everybody and then doing a lot of pictures and selfies and stuff like that, you know? And I just want to see how everyone was doing. Just being a gracious host, which is what people of hospitality do. They bring hospitality, i.e. healing. So I approached this family and I came in from the back, so I didn't actually see this person that I'm talking about, but I saw the parents and I recognized them and I saw the other son and they were having a great time. And I kind of came around and I just wanted to introduce myself. And the parents, who were obviously incredibly faithful Catholics, said, "And this is my daughter." And there was not a pained look on the mother's face, but there was certainly a look. And then I looked at the child, not a child, definitely a older teenager or a very young adult. And I could tell this was a person in transition. And I, at that moment, I'll have to admit that I looked at the parents and they were not ashamed. They were trying to hold their head up high and saying, "This is my daughter." And, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. I didn't know exactly what to say. So I just said, "Oh, it is great to meet you." And because I'm a professional, I didn't miss a beat. At least I don't think I missed a beat. And I just simply says, "It is a pleasure to meet you. I'm Father Leo." Shook the hand. And I said, "Hey, so, is this your first time coming to the events?" It was a 3-night event. And this person, who was clearly, again, a guy, deep voice, says, "Yeah, it's my first time." And I joked around and I said, "Oh, you missed the best part. It was the spiritual food that I was giving the first 2 nights," because I don't cook the first 2 nights. I just gave some talks. And this person said, "Oh, I just didn't think I would be welcome." Wow, that just kind of struck me to the heart, because it was very clear that we all knew what we were talking about. It was very clear that we all knew what we were talking about. And the best that I can do is say, "Listen, you know, I can't give communion to everyone, even though I can't stop anyone from receiving communion." And technically, folks, that is true. Technically, that's true. And I know people are going to get angry at that. But the one thing that struck out for me was Ashley kept saying how afraid she was that if anyone found out that she was transgender, that someone would take her to Catholic jail. And I know that a lot of people get frustrated with people like Father Martin, James Martin, who I'll be sharing his interview very soon, because they think that in reaching out to people of a different community, it's our way of quote unquote accepting the sinfulness of people. And when we say sinfulness, I'm not talking about them as being morally horrible, evil people. I'm just talking about the symptoms of our brokenness. I'm a sinful person, and I will admit that my mom and dad have accepted me and my sinfulness, you know, whether it be as something minor as being disrespectful. But I don't know if that's actually very minor. That's actually pretty serious. Disrespecting, disobeying, dishonoring your mom and dad are part of the commandments. Yet my mom and dad accept me. And so I had to really think about what Catholic jail means for some people. And I think that people in the transgender community, and part of it is the Catholic Church's fault, part of it is their fault. They are just not willing to accept as many of the other tenets of the Catholic faith. You know, from what I'm sensing in Ashley's conversation is that Ashley tries to accept as much of the Catholic Church's teaching as she possibly can as a person of the transgender community. So it's just, it's hard, because I think what happens is that in our desire to be zealots in our faith, we become zealots, and those are not pleasant people. Sure, they are strong, you know, like kind of like the Maccabees, for example, the Maccabee brothers in the Old Testament. They were in a way zealots for the faith, but they didn't kill it. They didn't kill for the sake of killing. They killed to defend their Catholic Church. We're not at that stage in our very modern history where we have to kill somebody to defend the Catholic Church, even though people want to kill us. Our martyrdom says that, you know, they're killing us almost in a sense, releases the seed of blood of the martyrs, which helps to nourish the faith in the future. With regards to the transgender community, we're not at that point where we're literally having to commit war and atrocities against the other. Not at all. Not at all. So I think my carryout order kind of reminds me of a couple things. One, please stop being militant. I don't think we need to be militant in our approach to Catholicism. I think we need at this time to be more martyrs, to be witnesses of the faith, to be instruments of peace, to be those who don't see themselves as the ultimate shepherd, but as part of the flock, listening to the voice of the shepherd who calls us. Holy Father Francis is calling us to love one another and literally trying to show that, like the way this mom and dad wanted to at least show love for this transgendered daughter of theirs. But honestly, I sometimes get confused. Is it transgendered man or is it transgendered woman, depending on from what sex they are transitioning out of? It can be actually kind of confusing. And that's why I kind of just simply had to ask a lot of questions as to what, how do I refer to you, that, and the other. What I think was interesting also is that Ashley talks about a Catholic evolution, you know, how the church has kind of evolved. And that is true. We have evolved. I mean, just look at the way we pray. Now, some people are going to say, it was better then. I don't know if that's true, if it was better prior to Vatican II. You know, I met many people who were very much a part of the Catholic Church prior to Vatican II, and now they don't even go to church anymore at all. They are just so angry. I don't know if that's a better attitude. And I know many people who were very much involved in the pre-Vatican II movement, including my grandparents and my own parents. And yet after Vatican II, they are incredibly still faithful and still joyful. And so they still believe in the same things, even though our liturgy has quote unquote evolved. Evolution is just a part of life. It really is. It's just a part of life. And we actually in the Catholic Church believe it. But it requires us to change into the better and the best version of ourselves. That means seeking the holiness that we deserve because God gave it to us. And so the idea of Catholic evolution is that we have changed. I mean, the Catholic Church at one point, just because of, God, people bring it up all the time about the slavery issue. Yep. We kind of had them. We have servants now in the Catholic Church. We call them deacons, you know, and that was an evolutional stage. At one point, priests were married. Now they are not. And now we have priests who come from a different Christian tradition, like the Anglicans, called the Ordinariate. And that has evolved. And so I'm not afraid of evolution as I am afraid of losing the identity of who I am. And so I think the last thing I want to do, because this can go on forever, is that I just want to thank Ashley for the opportunity to just have a deeper conversation with me. And hopefully she will continue to evolve. She will continue to experience a conversion. She will continue to live the chastity that God calls her to in her life. And more importantly, that she will know that Christ is always her companis, with bread, companion, because I know that ultimately no one deserves to be alone. And even though there may be many people in the community who believe that the Catholic Church abandons them, here is at least one priest of many, many priests who will never abandon his people. You know, sinful or not, it is my job to be kind of like my own parents who show me what true holiness is. Being willing to accept the sinner as part of the family, even if it doesn't mean accepting and agreeing with or giving credibility and a positive reaction to the sin itself. You heard Ashley say that she could tell when I was uncomfortable, because I was, but I was at least trying to be loving. And I think if there's any one last thing we can all take away is, regardless of how a person identifies themselves, we have to see them as children of God, still as a person. And we all have our own brokenness, but guess what? It is what it is at this stage of the game. I just hope that I'm not annoying to anybody in the process. So that is my carryout order. I hope you enjoyed it. And I really do hope you enjoyed this entire conversation. Please continue to listen and share these episodes with family, friends, and parishioners and pastors. And please be a part of supporting us, including SoulCorps, who helped to sponsor this particular episode, A Movement to Nourish Body, Mind, and Soul. I'll be honest with you, it could look like yoga, but it has one different objective, not to kind of create strength in your own core, but to know who your core really is, and that's Jesus Christ, which is why they combine a lot of movement with the meditations of the rosary, and you can learn more about it at soulcore.com, soulcore.com. So once again, thank you for listening, and if you like what you hear and want to support us, please do so. We desperately could use your help at Patreon, patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds. And so between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.